go?
All right, let's get started.
Let's get started. April 13, 2025. We're talking Nintendo. We're talking, I was about to say Destiny. We are not playing Destiny. We are talking Marathon.
We're never going back to that bad place.
This is Super
Game.
Give
me another raid.
Yeah, well, we can do another raid. That would be fun.
This is Super Gamecast.
This is a podcast about video games and video game industry news. I'm Aaron. I got Bronson and Duncan here with me. How y'all doing?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been another week.
My body broken and beaten by a hike.
I'm glad you went out and got a hike going. That was good.
Yeah,
good stuff.
I'm broken and beaten by straining a muscle in my back.
Video game news we have.
I guess we should get into the video game news. We got some. Thankfully, we do not have a direct to break down. So we got that going for us, but
we might actually finish on time for once.
We might, but we have to talk about Nintendo doing the one thing they really didn't need to do, and like there is no reason for them to step on this rake. They pulled a Don Matrick.
they didn't just step on the rake. They like went off a ramp, did a backflip, and boomed right on it.
So, who wants to read this? What happened here?
So, in an interview go ahead, Duncan. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to read the quote.
I want to hear it directly.
As we look at Nintendo Switch 2 and you think about the feature sets that I talked about, we believe that the pricing is appropriate for the value of the machine and the gameplay experience overall. We recognize there are some people that may not be able to afford the Nintendo Switch 2 price point. That's why we wanted to make the other Switch platforms available, so people still have an opportunity to come into our gaming universe, to be a part of these characters in these worlds, and see value, if you will, in whatever rung of the platform they come in.
Okay.
And this was within. This is Doug Bowser, president of Nintendo of America, talking to CBC Canada.
You have to give him a little credit. He was nicer about Poor's Get Out than Don Matrick, who back in the day said, "quote We have a product for people who aren't able to get some form of connectivity. It's called Xbox 360." During the release of the Xbox One.
This was a lot more flowery than that. I will give you that.
There are two
PR trained.
Yeah, first of all, sounds nicer. There isn't this attitude about it. And then there's the bit of context that like amplifies what Matrick did and sort of subdues what Doug Bowser did, which with Don Matrick, it was like, this was after a conference of like, this is your friggin' TV box. This is going to be the most amazing thing. Yeah. And in 2013, we're getting rid of physical. We're going in. And so just having all that happen all at once, really bad. Whereas in this one, it's like Nintendo just showed off an amazing console. It was a great show. Yeah. And it wasn't like something crazy. The price, while higher, it was not outlandish. This was not a PS3 $600 moment. Partially because they didn't include it in their conference. But, you know.
I think that the price on this thing is, like, I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's like, it's not that bad. It's like, relative to where inflation has gone and the tech in the system, it is not that bad.
I think that a lot of the conversation around price isn't really about the console, other than tariffs possibly affecting it. A lot of that's around the games themselves.
And even then, like, I've had this conversation with multiple people in the comments of that new editorial I did, which is, I would rather pay $80 for some product that like Nintendo makes, which is finished and polished and isn't filled with microtransactions and bullshit, than $70 for a game that has all that.
Yeah.
So
I'll say about this statement, it, as you mentioned, the context is obviously much better than when Xbox had their nightmare statement occur. I remember back in the day, I was a 14-year-old Xbox fanboy at the time. And even I...
As most 14-year-old American boys are.
Right. Even I understood that the Xbox One was just... Everything that was being said about it was a series of bad statements that were just like, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know, you don't need physical games. And then they just gave PlayStation the gimme of having that ad where they just go, this is how you share games on PlayStation. And they just hand each other a game.
Amazing.
And that in combination with the, well, the Xbox One isn't for the poors. The 360 is for the poors. Being the vibe of that statement. This, on the other hand, like you said, they're coming in with just a bunch of fire from an incredible announcement, even though there is a lot of worry about price point. Mm-hmm. So that he was really gentle about saying, we've already made a bunch of consoles for poor people. You don't need the fancy console because we gave you the poor person console. Go buy a Switch Lite.
I mean, like, also, we all know it, assuming the world economy doesn't get ruined.
Yeah.
Like, let's pretend the external stuff is kind of just because we don't know what's happening.
Right.
We really don't. Right. And we can't. And it's so wild we can't prognosticate on it. So I'm like, all right, well, I have to assume things are going to stay in a certain range of stable.
Yeah.
Assuming that happens, like, the price on this thing is going to come down. They're obviously trying to still juice some Switch 1 numbers while they still can.
Yeah.
And I think, and it that console is still selling well. The thing still sold a shit ton of units last year, you know, and is still selling a shit ton of units this year. So I think that, yeah, they're going to juice another year or two out of Switch 1 and then cut price on Switch 2, assuming that they don't get absolutely annihilated by external factors. You know,
yeah.
So it's like, I think that, and, you know, I don't think Sony is the best comparison for this back in 2006, but the PS2 was in a very similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
Where the PS2 sold 155 million units and was still being sold 4 years or 3 years into the PS3's life.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that there's that.
And then what this is all about, what the controversy is, like, obviously there's, you know, Sound and Light, Don Matrick, which, like, if you have any understanding of, like, the history of this industry, that was one thing you really needed to avoid. But, like, this is all about the price of the games. This is where the sensitivity is around. And, like, in the week that we've been, you know, doing our thing since last podcast, I'm sitting here thinking, like, honestly, like, the raised price of games, I don't think is going to affect Nintendo very much. Where it's going to hurt is people are going to be a lot more conservative with their full price purchases, which means Nintendo first parties, and it will actually impact people outside that decide to make the move to $80 or $90, and that'll affect the larger industry.
So, So I can only look at my own buying habits, and for me, what ended up happening with the move to $70, because at $60, I was buying games like crazy. I'd buy, like, any AAA game I was remotely interested in. Extra $10 ended up making it so I stopped buying yearly franchises, especially at full price. Like, I only buy COD about every other year, sometimes every 3 years after that. No. And then I also wait till Black Friday to play Madden, because it's usually half off on Black Friday. I have stopped taking chances on blob games. Like, I didn't buy Hogwarts Legacy at all. I was like, I can wait. Think about, you know, if ever the industry goes to $80, then the games I am spending $80 are going to mainly focus on sure bets, which is going to be, like, the tippy top of my, like, developers and publishers I trust. Like, I'll pay $80 for a Capcom game. I'll fucking pay $80 for a Capcom game every fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pay $80 for a Nintendo game. But, like, when you trot out, like, you know, Black Myth Wukong, even if it looks cool, it's like, I don't know who these guys are. This is a new game. I've never heard of these people. I'm not going to blow $80 on this. You know,
it needs to be extremely your thing just from, like, looking at it, or else you're not inclined to waste that money.
Right, like, exactly. Like, if they were to put out, you know, Tides of Annihilation looks right on my alley, it looks super cool, if it was $80, I'd probably just wait for a sale. So then, and I am, like, that kind of consumer that is willing to blow a lot of money on video games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? So I think for a more conservative consumer who is a little more choosy, this basically just makes it so they only buy their absolute favorites. Like, they're such only not going to take chances.
Me. I'm that consumer.
Yeah.
I very rarely buy AAA games nowadays. I play a lot of indie titles and a lot of titles that I've bought in the past. I think the only AAA game I've purchased in the last year is Monster Hunter Wilds.
Mm.
And I literally can't even think of the last one I purchased before that.
Right.
I generally try and stick to things that that, you know, I know I have a good relationship with, and if I look at all my past played games, I really only have Monster Hunter Wilds in all of my recent games on Steam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
as a AAA games purchase. So, you know, I have to be very persuaded by a game, having had a lot of history with Monster Hunter, is what does it for me there, right? It's that I know it's probably going to be a good game. I've played all the other Monster Hunter games to some extent since 3. Mm-hmm. So I'm obviously going to end up playing Wilds, but you give me there was that gimmick series, not gimmick series, that mimic series that was very much like Monster Hunter, that was an anime game.
Mm.
I'm not going to jump $60 on that, because I don't have an existing relationship with that I know that I'm going to get some value out of it, whereas I could just, you know, go play Noita or Minecraft.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, this also benefits free-to-play games in a lot of ways. It's like, because, like, I love Marvel Rivals, right? Like, I've been playing Marvel Rivals pretty consistently since it came out. Came out in December, I have 260 hours in that fucking game.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, like, if I see, like, oh, bullshit, EA AAA game is $80, or I can just keep playing Marvel Rivals for free. Like, yeah, I'm going to keep playing Marvel Rivals for free. Out of curiosity, I looked at my top 10 games of last year. Half of that list is AAA.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, thinking to myself, okay, which of these would I pay $80 for? Metaphor ReFantazio. Yes. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. No, I'd wait for a sale. Indiana Jones. Maybe. Like, maybe. I played it on Game Pass, so it's really hard to tell, like, for me, the value. I did love the game, though. Infinite Wealth, absolutely. Tekken 8, absolutely. Astrobot is kind of a double A, and I would, I'd pay $1 for that. Like, I would not pay, but, like, so, you know, I'd still pay $80 for some AAA games, but it has to be, like, so in my wheelhouse and, like, up my alley that I, you know, I would, that's what I would want to do.
A streamer, Northern Lion, recently had a good take on this subject that I would point to, that he said, if the world was fair and games were priced on how great they are, then a game like Star Wars Outlaws or something would be like $1.50, and Balatro would be $500.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I have said for a while now that I think a variable price structure makes sense. I think that, you know, so I think that Sony put out Astrobot at 60 instead of 70 last year, probably because they think it's a smaller scale experience. I think that if publishers want to start exploring variable pricing, which it seems that's what Nintendo's doing, I think that's actually a great idea.
It's going to be interesting going forward because this is, people are going to follow Nintendo's lead on these game prices, and it's going to be very interesting to see how everyone spreads their money around and what lessons the industry takes from it.
Mm-hmm. I am just looking to see what studios are super delusional.
Right.
That's what I want to see. I want to see how delusional are Ubisoft and EA.
I'm curious. I'm worried about the after effects of all of it, but the process of going through the finding out part will be fun.
Because at the end of the day, it doesn't affect me too much because I know what games I really really want to enjoy and like and whatnot, and I have a shit ton of indies. And if I'm being completely honest, if I were to just, I could honestly live as a gamer on my back catalog for probably 3 to 4 years.
Oh yeah. Yep. It's just a bit of a pain for the younger crowd, younger and poorer. So,
yes.
Yeah. Hey, Doug Bowser, you should go, watch that conference with Don Matrick. And watch him get yeeted to Zynga, and now who knows where?
I'm sure he has a bajillion dollars.
He's got 20 something Ferraris in his garage, whatever, somewhere where he is. He made a lot of money.
He
used
to take a helicopter
down
to work.
Yeah, he's got
Don Matcher.
Yeah, he got plenty of money for acquiring and then shutting down studios. That's just real good guy.
Apparently, he works. He was at Zynga for a long time and then became a co-founder and co-president of a privately held company that manages assets.
Okay.
That's what he's been up to.
Pivoted full finance.
Sure.
Apparently he's always been part of this. So ever since 1991, while doing all this other shit, he's been in a group that manages assets throughout North America. Mostly high-tech ventures such as Photonic, Nordeus, and Dapper Labs.
Okay. Yeah.
After Zynga, he just disappeared. So he left Xbox in 2013, spent 2 years at Zynga, did that documentary that Xbox did in 2021. And then just hasn't been seen since. On that documentary, he said the Xbox One reveal event was too focused on TV features, and he could have assured people better they cared about video games.
Yeah.
Could have done that. He could have.
Could have. Just real quick, remember when Zynga ruled the world? Zynga was the company for a while?
Wasn't it?
Yeah, for
Farmville.
It's Farmville.
Wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, they had Mafia Wars and Farmville. They had a bunch of Facebook games.
Facebook games. Facebook games were the thing. That was such a weird time. Yep.
That escapist bracket was the funniest thing in the world in hindsight.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. The trying to explain that to people now would be just ridiculous.
I just love how that there is a 10-year period of the internet where if you tried to explain it to people, it would be a fever dream.
Yeah. Dog, I want to talk to you about Infinity Blade.
I played Infinity Blade, and it's in Fortnite.
Is it in Fortnite?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
They made Infinity Blade.
Fuck yeah. Let's go.
It's one of the super weapons that you're able to find during certain seasons. It's always been there, since season one.
It's an epic game, right? It's an epic franchise.
Yeah.
That makes sense. By them.
Damn, good for them. All right,
that's legacy. A Fortnite weapon.
So next news story.
Next news story.
Hey, dog. The tariffs are causing some chaos in terms of forecasting. So, yeah.
An analyst firm is predicting that this is still going to be the fastest selling console ever.
Yep.
But they're also saying it's lowered because of tariff pricing concerns. They have said that with tariffs and uncertain pricing, Nintendo may choose to scale back its manufacturing. If prices increase substantially due to tariffs, a significant portion of the buyers are still likely to hold back on purchases until price comes down. The situation is changing, will be closely monitored as DFC regularly updates its forecast throughout the year.
The gist of this story, I feel, is basically that the 17 million sales number is so high that even with an expected reduction of 2 million in sales, it still would be the fastest selling console ever. And they still think that's going to happen.
Yes, especially because it'd be 15 million units over the course of 6 months, which is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at Switch 1 sales, which at its current pace is looking like it's going to be the best-selling console ever. If not, it's going to be damn close. Its best year was like 27 million, which was COVID. Was 2021, the year after COVID.
Yep.
And then the year the other best years were 2022 and 2020, which also makes sense because of COVID, Pokemon, and a bunch of other factors. So, like, hitting, you know, over half of the high mark in 6 months seems like a very, very fucking optimistic fantasy number.
Yeah, I do think they're maybe a little overzealous about how high they think these numbers are going to get.
Yeah.
There's
reason for optimism in simply releasing a new, better Switch with the brand new Mario Kart, but here's the variable is at the time of Switch 2's release, there could be a whole lot of like, are the tariffs going up or not? Because if they are, now is the time to get it at $450 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know they're moving. They're probably moving a lot of Switch 2 units to different countries to try and avoid anything big. But knows, man.
Well, the tariffs on the countries that Switch 2 is primarily manufactured in, that being Cambodia and Vietnam, have been put on pause for 90 days.
Except for China.
Yeah, right. And 90 days is long enough to reach the Switch 2 launch window.
Right.
So
the launch window. Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't have to worry about getting consoles in for a solid launch, which may or may not result in going, you know what, let's just ship everything we possibly can over to the States as fast as we can and then just sell out of stock slowly. Mm-hmm. I see that as a reasonable occurrence that we might not get hit by a price increase, maybe a 10%, which is still not insubstantial. You know, it's a 10% increase is still $45. And so, you know, it makes it almost $500. But I don't think it's going to sell 15 million still. I think that the situation is just not in its favor, and that the economic uncertainty, it's not only going to lead to consumer uncertainty in their purchases for price increase, but also just general consumer uncertainty in purchases because of economic turmoil caused by the current economic difficulties that people are going through as a consequence of the market crash.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, like, looking back at the last major recession we had, 2008, video games did exceptionally well in spite of all that because people were, like, buying games instead of, like, going on vacation and doing shit like that.
Right.
So I could see a, like, win for them if that if history repeats itself in that sense of, oh, I can't afford to go on vacation or do a lot of shit, so I'm gonna go double down, buy a Switch 2 and just play video games at home. You know, like I think that that is a possibility, but
2008 had different enough market conditions that I find it unlikely that video games would be successful in the same manner they were during an economic crash during the previous one, largely because video games have grown so much that, you know, as of right now, they're the largest form of media. They
were back then. They beat movies and music back then.
Really? I didn't know that they had done it that early. But regardless, I believe that they've started to approach their effective consumer market cap in that they're reaching the audiences that will play video games. You're not going to get a Wii that breaks out amongst people that don't play games and introduces a huge number of people into the industry like you did back during that era. In today's market, because I think so many more people play games, it's so much more ubiquitous, and that people who have been lifelong gamers have aged up to a point where there are very few new markets to capture for gamers. Whereas during 2008, you had things like you had games getting introduced into colleges, getting way more popular there, and the older generation getting to a point where they had a lot larger of a degree of consumer spending available amongst the market that was interested in video games as they aged up from children into people in the 18 to 35 range where they're way more productive, and they were the ones who weren't able to go on vacation and purchasing an Xbox or a PlayStation because they had the income necessary to purchase a video game console but not to go on vacation because of the economic crash, whereas a child requires the buy-in of their parents and they're just generally a worse consumer on the whole. So I think video games don't have that advantage going into this potential economic recession that they had back in the day.
I don't think they have the growth advantage of expanding into new markets like the Wii did and kind of like, but I still think that you have like, is. But now that you have adults who are more familiar with video games, who are more willing to like understand the value of a $450 Switch and being like, oh yeah, I'll totally get my kid a Switch because I know they're going to get 8 years of Mario Kart and Zelda and other games I know are good for my kid. You know, I think that is a big... You know, so I think that, you know, entertainment does real well during bad economic times. Really well. Not like expensive entertainment. And I think that, well, $450 is not an inconsequential amount of money. That's a lot of money.
Right.
But I think that for something that most people will get 6 to 9, 10 years out of, I think most people see that as a worthwhile investment. I think $80 games or $80 game, like there's only one that's like a new game, is a harder sell. I think that's a significantly harder sell. But I also think that, like, I'm not expecting like market growth, but I am still expecting it to do well. I think these analysts are out of their fucking mind, though. I think they're at like fucking 15 million in 6 months, bro. I want someone to bookmark this so we can take a look back at it at the end of the year.
I would like that because I have no idea. I think it's going to sell well. What the number's going to be, I have no idea. What are people doing out there?
Like I think it'll do a lot better than like Switch 1 or PS2's first year.
Sure.
Like, to be fair, PS2's first year was only like 3 months in the market, but still. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, I want to do that, and I'm at the end of the year, I'm sure we'll look into console sales. So it's like,
It'll be interesting to look at. I just don't think it'll be. I don't think it's as interesting as, again, like the idea of markets going crazy and then trying to push $80 to $90 games throughout the industry. I think that's the much more interesting thing to look at than this. But you know, that's just me.
Oh, yeah.
I am suspicious. I am suspicious of analyst firms like this. I always have been. I think they're incredibly vulnerable to hype. And that if you go around and you follow a bunch of analyst firms and always follow their advice, you're still not going to outperform the market. They're not actually accurate to an extent that is like so much better than the consumer public about the performance of companies.
If you want the most accurate performance of a company, you just follow Nancy Pelosi's stock.
Aha!
40%. She's the goat.
God damn it.
It's true, though, dude. It's totally true.
How much Nintendo stock does Nancy Pelosi have?
I'm sure we could find out.
Yeah.
Not sure.
We need to do this right now. We got a podcast to do, but that's something for you, the viewer, can do at home. Comment. Leave a comment what you find. Oh, my God. All right.
But the next story. Is that the former Nintendo PR manager says that, quote, this isn't Ubisoft. And say the company mantra of respect the value holds. A short little story with an interview with Kit Ellis and Krista Yang, former Nintendo of America marketing lead, is who Kit Ellis is, and Krista Yang being the interviewer here. They were talking about the Switch 2.
This was on a podcast. So there are two Nintendo of America former marketing people named Kit and Krista. For those of you that remember, they used to do Nintendo Minute. Nintendo used to do on its YouTube.
Here. I misinterpreted that story.
No, you're good, bro. And they were talking about the price increase on software, in which they said Nintendo's product, the mindset, at least, Ellis says, Nintendo products have immense value. We must always respect that immense value. This is why things don't go on sale often. This is the value, and we are seriously into the concept of respect the value of what this thing is that we have made because it is very special. And then he was still followed up with a joke, this isn't Ubisoft. And then Yang says, as a Nintendo customer fan, you're kind of conditioned to it. If you want to buy this, might as well buy this now because it's not going to go on sale. And then Ellis followed up by saying, it's a Nintendo tax. What we made was 60. A lot of those other games that are 60 are junk. They don't have a level of Nintendo quality or polish or attention, so we need to distinguish how premium this is through the pricing, and you will come to understand that.
You gotta give credit. Not even the marketing leads in Nintendo anymore, and yet they're glazing. They're glazing. They're like, obviously Nintendo's amazing, and they're gonna crush it. So,
I listened to this. I do listen to their podcast sometimes because I like having the inside baseball of what people at that company think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is them saying, this isn't our take. This is what the upper management believes and why they handle pricing structure the way they do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be real. I think they're right. I think that pound for pound, if you want to talk about the best value out of your $60, I think Nintendo really is only beaten by FromSoft and like sometimes Capcom.
It's
I do love my FromSoft games.
Yeah. They're not wrong, especially for their first party stuff.
It's sound. Yeah. If anyone can sell me on an $80 game, it's Nintendo. I looked at Mario Kart World and I'm like, yeah, I'll probably get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love most about this is people who are free from the corporate world being able to take some shots. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this part about the conditioning being like, well, it's not going to go down in value. So like,
yeah,
it's so true. It's like if the next Pokemon game comes out and it looks like Scarlet and Violet, right? The next Generation 10 and it looks like Scarlet and Violet, I'm going to be mad about it.
Yep.
Right. I'm gonna be mad. I will pay $80 for it, is the issue.
You know, I will say Nintendo is doing a free update to Scarlet and Violet. Like it's gonna get an up res and 60 FPS and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Switch 2. And I like had this brief thought of maybe I should give Scarlet a shot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
that's the thing about
woke up nightmare.
It's unfortunately, I really love the way the game is structured, and I think it's like a fun little experience.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It just runs awful.
Yep.
It's like it's just a poorly constructed game. But the new Pokemon are cool. And I like the you don't have to do the gyms in order.
Yeah.
And you know, you can approach things differently, and it's not just gyms too. There's the big raid boss monsters. There's fun additions.
I didn't get to play all of them, but I think the way they've been doing gyms recently fucking sucks. It's bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's a gym battle. You gotta go find 10 Mareep in the city. Great.
That I don't like. I don't like the gym challenges that go with each gym battle. I get why they're doing it. But, you know, I want to just fight the guy. I just want to fight the guy.
It's in my mind. It's like it's a $30 game that has a $50 Pokemon tax. And, you know, I'm probably going to check it out. It's just I'm Pokemon get, for
I got to transfer. I got to transfer my Pokemon Bank Pokemon over. I can't not do that.
So, yeah, Nintendo knows what they're doing with this.
I do love his little jab at Ubisoft.
It's so good.
It's Ubisoft.
Yep.
So good. Just released from, as Aaron put it, just released from corporate. Just and get that in there.
I'm just gonna kick them while they're down. Down.
And
they're selling
in a similar
all
sense, the next story, which is effectively the same statement, but from a former PlayStation boss.
Yeah, different side of the console war.
Sean Layden.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Layden says that has said that Nintendo's first-party IP is strong enough to mitigate the quote sticker shock of $80 games. This is another quote from a podcast from a former chained executive, but this time to PlayStation, where he's talking about how you know, if it's the only place to play Mario, you buy it.
It's just it's the truth, you know. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
It's they have incredible first party IP with you know like he says if it's the only place you can play Mario, then you get your wallet out and you buy into it. That first party exclusivity kind of mitigates the sticker shock, if you will, of these price hikes because you want the content so bad. Something I feel like PlayStation doesn't really have. I feel like a lot of the PlayStation titles, well, they do have exclusives. They're not first party, right? For the most part, PlayStation's first party is lacking by comparison, I think, to Nintendo, who is the titan of first party IP. You know, I don't think their exclusives have ever sold me heavily on a PlayStation console, hence why I don't even have a PS5.
I think they have, but the problem is they don't. This is both good and bad in my mind. It's good because you get fresh IP, but the bad part is that it's hard to build like long-term legacy with it. They tend every generation or generation and a half, they tend to swap out like franchises. So like you'll look at like PS2, it's like Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank, Sly Cooper, Shadow of the Colossus, stuff like that. And then on PS3 is like Uncharted, Resistance, Killzone, Motorstorm, Infamous. PS4 is like Last of Us, Bloodborne, Days Gone, God of War, Horizon. And then like PS5, yeah, Horizon. PS5 is kind of continuing some of that, but also doing some fresh stuff with Astrobot. So
I feel like you can see a very distinct vibe shift over the years as the industry as a whole kind of shifts its vibe. Sony goes along with that trend.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo's obviously just always been Nintendo.
Yep.
They've been super staunch in their vibe, the kind of IP they make. Yep. Those games don't change in how they feel. Whereas I feel like Nintendo's first party is flavor of the 5-year period.
I think that there is very much a, and that actually kind of sucks as a fan of some of those older franchises. Like, I would love a new Resistance.
Right.
I would love a new Motor Storm. I would love a new Fat Princess. That shit ain't happening.
I don't see why they can't get a small team to make another Fat Princess, but whatever.
I don't either.
Yeah, but I think it's partially a consequence of Sony being the default console for like your gamer that isn't just, you know, playing the kid-friendly stuff, I guess, like just mainline, like, because Sony has been the front runner for most of the time. It's been like, that's just kind of the direction they go in, is what are people making games of.
Right.
All right.
If you're playing a sports game, you're probably playing it on a PlayStation, mm-hmm. and that's not really a Sony thing. Like, it's not Sony doing that.
Except for the baseball game. That is them.
That is them?
The baseball game is actually them.
Yes.
I see. Yep.
But it's like, okay, so... But I think of, like, you know... Theatrical action adventure games is kind of what they put forward since Uncharted 2, at least. And it's like,
yes,
I'm thinking about, like, okay, PlayStation goes $80 after Switch 2 launch. Ghost of Yote, the next God of War thing they do, the next mainline God of War thing.
Right. Next Night Dog game.
Yep.
If
they can maintain their next Horizon game,
Wolverine,
sure. Next Spider-Man for sure. It's a matter for them of like keeping that release schedule consistent, some form of consistent. Which I think this year they're not doing as amazing, but they've got some other stuff coming
this
out.
This year
too.
Is like Death Stranding and Ghost of Yote.
Yeah, right.
Like that's their big fish, and next year is Wolverine and nothing else we really know about.
Right.
Even this, I feel the current era. I feel the current era kind of as a blanket over their first party releases. You know, you've got two Marvel properties in there as their big releases. It's like, you know, this is what media is at right now, and PlayStation is like, yep, and we're what media is right now also.
Yeah, like they have kind of they tried to do live service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They tried to do live service for and failed miserably. They got one success out of all their live service bets. Helldivers is sick though.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sick.
All very the bloodshed much. Was worth it for Helldivers too.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like it's been, you know, you look at the launch, Spider-Man, Demon's Souls, Souls likes and Souls games are hot. Spider-Man's big. You look at the following year, Ratchet and Clank and Returnal. That was weird. That was a weird year. Then you have the year after that. It was Gran Turismo, which that's a forever. That's like their one forever franchise.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gran Turismo is like their one forever franchise. And then it was God of War, Ragnarok, and Horizon. Big cinematic open world games, or in God of War's case, Metroidvania style open world, Arkham open world, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Right.
Right.
And then 2023, I think, was just fucking Spider-Man.
I will take your word for it.
Yeah, well, big. Big game.
Yeah.
That was my second favorite game that year. Oh, they also released, that Horizon VR experience?
Sure.
Right.
And then last year, it was like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which wasn't them, but they did a co-publishing deal. Oh, they also did a co-publishing deal in 2023 with Final Fantasy 16. Mm. It was a timed exclusive.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like they've been doing timed exclusives with Square. They've also been going out and like making timed exclusives of like shit like Stellar Blade, like Korean and Chinese games.
It's been a decent strategy for them. So.
Yeah, like it's been weird. But yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, you know, I think that their strategy has largely been not the strategy of the giant killer games that really pull people in because they just have to play it, but instead of the many, many killer games, the many small killing spree games that some people have to come and play, but most people don't. And if you have 10 small-time mass killer games, then you're going to get one major killer property worth of player conversion. And, you know, you're doing that with your timed exclusives. You're doing that with all these properties that are great. You're releasing just, you're getting great games onto your system, but nothing like, you know, I feel like a Mario Kart World is probably going to be a much more consumer interest than really any of the major titles that people are talking about on Sony consoles.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, Spider-Man is, like, the one exception.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I think, like, Spider-Man is, I think they're up to, like, 13, 14 million copies of that game at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Spider-Man is freaking Spider-Man.
You know. Yeah, like, it did 11 million copies in the first, like, 12 months. So, like, yeah, that game is doing fucking great. Yeah. So, you know.
People love the spider.
I loved that game, man. It was my second favorite game of that fucking year. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Sony responds as Nintendo makes the move.
I do think his quote here is, recently it went to $70 and people went crazy. I think Nintendo putting a band-aid right off and saying, look, like, it's $80 for a frontline game on the new platform. You know, and then they also said they poked through the ceiling of price elasticity we thought none existed before.
Right.
Yeah, and people are fucking big mad about $80, man.
I mean, like, I'm
still seeing discussion about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially as everything just got more expensive in general over the past, you know, like, 3 years.
Yep.
Like, if this was 3 years ago, people would have been upset, but they also didn't get hit by, like, 25% inflation on all goods over the past, you know, 2022 to now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Right. We got some more Nintendo talk, this time talking about the subject of pack-in games. And our good friend Reggie, friend of the show, Reggie.
Yes, obviously.
Right.
Anthony Todd got to see his talk at PAX last year, actually.
Beautiful.
Oh.
Wonderful.
He went to... Reggie, if you want to be on this show, man, we'll have you.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to hear this.
Absolutely. Totally.
I will add him on Blue Sky. I'll be like, yo, you want to be on a podcast that, like, 100 people watch?
Yeah, yeah.
If
that, yep.
Anyway, he's talking about the debate that I was not personally aware of. There's a debate regarding the Switch 2 Welcome Tour game thing.
Yeah.
One of you tell me what's going on here?
Yeah. So Reggie, back in the day of the Wii, had a huge argument with Miyamoto. Like, it was this big problem between them where Miyamoto... He really staunchly believes that if a team works hard on a game, it should be sold for money, right? That it's, like, almost disrespectful to the people who made the game if that game is not sold for money. Like, that it's a representation of the value of the hard work that those people have put into it. And Reggie went, man, if we sell the Wii with no games on it, people aren't going to like it. People are going to get the Wii and they're going to get something like something with poor support for, you know, like a Twilight Princess, right? Like Zelda Twilight Princess, incredible game. Also play the GameCube version, right? Because you don't want to use the waggle.
I like the waggle in that game. It's good for aiming.
I was gonna say that was the one
selling point for me, was that being able to use the bow, but otherwise, like,
yeah, but otherwise you could have got it on GameCube. It doesn't sell the Wii.
Yeah.
It doesn't sell the Wii specifically. And Reggie's huge concern back in the day was that was, and he talks about this, I believe, in his book, even though that isn't mentioned in the story here. But, you know,
I want to read that book. It's on my list.
Yeah, how it was a major point of contention between him and Miyamoto, and how he was dead set on getting Wii Sports to be a pack-in game with the Wii, because Wii Sports is an incredible title for selling motion control, like, as a feature. And the Wii was so hinging on people liking motion control and that selling them on other games that use it, that if they came in and they got something like Wii Carnival Games, which is just a terrible game that uses motion controls very poorly, then it was going to burn them on motion controls entirely and burn them on the console completely, and it would get bad word of mouth, and that people would not buy the Wii. And so eventually he got his way, but he only got his way in America and Europe.
Right.
Where he had more control over the launch. And in Japan, the Wii did not have Wii Sports in it. Mm-hmm. And Wii Sports, for a period, I think it was almost the best-selling game of all time as a consequence.
It's still in the top five best-selling games ever.
And he was right. He was right. It performed really well in foreign markets in comparison to Japan. And Wii Sports is probably the reason that is. It's that, you know, you have a Wii and immediately you have a game that especially casual consumers loved. And that made it so that, you know, a bunch of households in America, they just immediately had a good console with a good game on it. And you could smoothly introduce people to it. And that was huge for it.
Well, like, I mean, I look back on it and, like, my mom was not a gamer at the time, like, at all. And she got, like, she saw Wii Sports. And she was like, oh, like, I want to try that. That looks like a really good exercise thing, possibly. And, like, it looks interesting and easy to use, unlike the rest of the garbage you and your dad do.
Exact same thing my mom wants.
and that was kind of her gateway. Like, she ended up doing that. And then she bought, I have some of the Wii games that she left here. Like she had Everybody Golf.
Mm-hmm.
She had that game and a couple others. She did not get into Wii Fit, but then, like, it led to her also like using my DS for Brain Age.
Right.
And, like, it led to her, like, going and, like, my mother, she is not a hardcore gamer or an enthusiast by any means, but she really likes Apple Arcade now. Like, she'll play Jetpack Joyride and, like, Bejeweled and stuff on Apple Arcade. So, like, because, you know, we have that Apple Family Plus subscription and Apple Arcade is part of it. So, like, yeah, like, for her, it was like a gateway into video games.
Yeah, and the Wii's success is defined, like, the whole success story there is defined by its capturing of that casual audience in an era where video games were being defined by their barrier to entry. There, it was a big time of people being harder gamers, and the Wii was the console that anyone could hop into, and everyone did. And the actual story here being that the Switch 2 has its game Switch Welcome Tour that is not a pack-in game. It's $10, and everyone expected in its initial reveal that it would be a pack-in game, because it is literally just a game that shows you features of the Joy-Cons, basically.
Yeah, here's the thing. People let's talk about Nintendo Land. Does anyone remember Nintendo Land? Like,
that game was cool too.
It's
that
fine.
Game was really cool.
It's fine. That is not Wii Sports.
That Wii Luigi's Sports. Mansion minigame was fun though.
It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It is fine. But like, you got to make it something cool too. You got to make it something that people want to play. And the drama over Welcome Tour not being included, like, whatever, man, whatever. What I've seen of that, Astrobot would have been a much more. Nintendo should have just looked at Astrobot and did something like that.
They have Astrobot. Yeah. It's called Mario Galaxy.
I know, but they know that they can sell that for $80 with the launch, and it doesn't matter. They'll get it.
But you know, I look at Welcome Tour and I've seen some gameplay of it. In like the footage people are getting from that, you know, come try to switch to early thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's like for $10, I think that it's a fun little mini game thing. I think that you probably should have made it a pack in. It's kind of annoying that you didn't, but also for $10 to be like, hey, here's the original Mario level in 4K, and you can see it all at once to show you the difference in 4K. Like that's kind of a cool thing. I don't know. I think people are just like way too up in arms about this. Like, it's
are people
like,
up
you,
in
you
arms
know.
About this even?
I think that there's some people are like there's definitely like people.
What I'm saying is, are we making a big mess about like three people in a Twitter thread?
I think it's more so 100 people calling Nintendo stupid and not like being mad, but more so going, wow, that's dumb. And like everybody's looking at it and go, bad decision.
I mean,
I think that they're the Reddit thread about that.
Okay.
Like I've been in the Nintendo Reddit all week because I've been waiting for pre-orders to drop, and that seems like the best place to kind of give it a look. And yeah, these threads are like kind of popping off, like 100 comments, 120 comments, 70 comments about just being pissed off about Welcome Tour.
They can be pissed off about Welcome Tour.
I will say that there is one mini game that I like want to show to friends of mine, which is, it's called Guess the Frame Rate.
Oh,
and it's like
this,
literally.
Now this
like,
might be fun. All right, I want to see some videos on that.
They're literally showing you like a basketball that'll bounce across the screen, or like a tennis ball, or like different things that bounce across the screen, and they'll give you a multiple choice to guess the frame rate. Which you know, for my tech nerd friends, I'm like, this is something I want to see how many people can actually tell the difference. I want to buy this. I want to buy this game to show it to my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Be like, I'm like, all right, I have this hooked up to one of the best TVs you can buy that supports 120 FPS. And also I want to see how much you notice.
Right.
What you can tell.
I think there's something interesting in there. I think there could be some funny videos to be made out of that. Gonna pay $10 for this. I do think they should have packed it in, but whatever.
I do too. I think that the like Pixel Mario Super Mario Bros. 4K thing is super funny.
Sure.
Like that is also a fun. At the end of the day, though, like none of us have to buy it, and it reminds me of 1-2 Switch. Like, does everyone remember the 1-2 Switch?
I do.
It does remind me of 1-2 Switch.
That was even worse because that was $40.
And I think this has a similar issue in that they have not activated the dark spell. They have not begun the titanic strength that is the me. There are no me's in it.
Nope.
Yeah, I do agree. They brought back knees for Switch Sports, which I'm like, which
but they didn't. They made another thing. They made another thing like Miis that aren't Miis.
Okay.
It was cowardice. It was cowardice is what it was.
Are they bringing him back for another thing that's coming?
Tomodachi Life 2.
Right.
Look, I want Nintendo to bring back. I want them to bring back Miiverse for one.
Right.
But I want them to bring back Street Pass. Look, this is a handheld. I'm going to carry in my bag, Evo, and in San Francisco this year, and like wherever I travel next year. Yeah. And when I do that, I'm definitely going, I want the street pass back. I want to be at E3 and open it and get like Miyamoto or other journalists I know of and be like, oh, that's funny. I have their Mino.
Right.
Yeah. So,
that'd be neat. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. This isn't a huge story, but
I do think that it is a thing where I think more like hardware manufacturers should do a pack-in game more often.
Pack-in games are a good strategy, I think.
Yes. Yes. Especially if you got a good one. So
could you imagine if the Mario Kart bundle was like $450? Instead of 500,
yeah.
Like
if Mario Kart was a pack-in game, the world would end. I think.
I mean, I imagine a lot of people, myself included, are looking at a Switch 2, and it's like, you pay $500 for the Switch 2 with Mario Kart?
Yeah.
You save $30. Like, that might as well be. That's I'm as far as I'm concerned, I am buying the console with a pack-in game.
Yeah,
like that's where I'm at as well. Like the only way I will buy the pack-in version is if I literally can't. You
know. Right.
If they're just literally like, no, fuck you.
Yeah.
Kid, get this instead. I'm like, fine. I've kind of given up on getting a pre-order at a regular retailer.
Sure.
Like because we don't know when it's coming, we don't know what's going on. So I am counting on Nintendo looking at my absurd amount of playtime.
Uh-huh.
My NSO subscription and throwing me the invite, or I'm counting on our Best Buy adventure the night of launch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we can hope and pray. Speaking of Nintendo Switch pre-order issues, it seems like our pre-order delay is now hitting our buds up in Canada.
I am sorry to our Canadian brethren. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. To be fair, I totally would have been like, yeah, if I can get if I know somebody over by Canada, I'd be like, maybe we get it.
we do. Like yeah. Emily, our Emily's mod, like I even
talked to her about it.
I know. I even asked her like, yo, if we give you money, how you feeling about going across the border?
Right. Which is exactly what they're trying to avoid. They specifically are going, yeah, let's not hit a situation where the Canadian market is just super mad because the American market is messed up.
And nothing to do with them.
And further, Canada is often considered of generally being the same region as America. Like, it's the North American region. Mm-hmm. That is usually considered rather than just America and Canada separately. So it makes sense that any pre-order delay was going to hit Canada too.
Man. I'm also betting that they ship into the United States, so the tariffs also affect them. Like, that's my bet, is they like a boat ends up in like Seattle or ends up in like Oakland and then like gets trucked up to Canada. That is my guess.
This whole tariff situation is a major economic opportunity for Canada, but that applies kind of to the Switch too. I could definitely see a lot of Switch 2s coming through the northern border. But
let me tell you, I'm planning a vacation for next year to see my mother, who is in Michigan, and or she's looking at meeting me somewhere like Seattle, and I'm like. You know, I flew out to Michigan, and that's just a quick ferry ride across the way.
There you is. Could delay a Switch 2 purchase until you're over in Michigan. Yeah, I have a lot of family in the Seattle area, and I'm also considering just being like, oh, maybe I go visit my grandpa and see what's up over there.
So long as at that point they don't deem dodging tariffs as a reason to send you to a friggin' El Salvadorian labor camp.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm white, so I get to do it.
For now.
Yeah, that's different.
For now. Yeah.
Wait, what's your last name? Crabtree? No, you're probably
Crabtree. It's
probably
very fine. English, so yeah.
You know, I'm second tier white because I'm Italian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you, I think you got lumped in within the past 50 years. So no yeah. worry there. You get to buy yeah. a Switch too in Canada.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Great. Good to know.
Yeah. So, all right. We'll keep an eye on that situation because that's going to change on the daily.
Keep an eye on
so
the
many Canadians
border.
In the Reddits were pissed off, by the way.
Sure.
So yeah.
I don't blame them.
So there's already this whole thing in Canada about being really mad at Americans who cross the border to buy milk. And vice versa. Or I think it's there's a bunch of Americans mad at Canadians who cross the border to buy milk. That's what it is.
What?
Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing where people who live in border towns will be really mad. I think it's specifically Americans are mad at I can't remember which direction it is, but there's a whole industry of the grocery border crossing right now Canadians and Americans they're developing tension in these border towns because how dare you buy my groceries? Those are my groceries.
I mean, you know, there's a way to deal with that, but
yeah,
lordy.
I want to get onto something more important than silly little things
this
like
is
tariffs.
The most important story.
This is the most important
the
story
most
of our day.
Story.
We should have had the music queued up for this second.
We should have. Really, no, you're right.
When it comes to tariffs, those don't matter a lot in comparison to this. And when it comes to $80 games, that's not as much of an issue as this sort of thing.
No.
Launch prices. It's it's all kind of dwarfed by the real biggest thing about Nintendo coming around probably this whole year is that Nintendo says eShop music won't return for Switch 2 and likely never will.
What did you say?
So, yeah, your
you
audio
scroll down on the story. You can you can have the new story play or the music play. The Wii Shop.
Oh, okay.
Right. The Wii Shop channel main theme.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Is in
right.
the story. So you see, the issue here is that Nintendo believes that the Wii Shop music, as incredible as it is, can't really be included in the eShop because no music should be included in the eShop by their understanding on account of the fact that there's just a bunch of videos in games now. Games, they'll have videos to promote their game. A lot of products are just going to have a video involved, and they want a smooth audio transition experience, which having shop background music would get in the way of in their eyes.
Have it faded
just
it out.
You hit play.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
It just seems like some programmer at Nintendo is really fucking lazy. That's
I think I need to set. I think I need to go to Kyoto and I need to set myself on fire in front of their Kyoto offices in protest. Because really,
this seems to be like your solution to a lot of things, like getting the subscribers, getting eShop music back. How many skin grafts have you had, my man?
Well, you know, it's. I'm a passionate man. I'm a passionate man, and I think. I think my own death is the only large enough thing I have. To communicate how important this is to the world and to the people, you know.
I mean, at this point, I'm thinking there's someone who's been working at Nintendo for a long time and worked during the Wii era. Is like, I don't ever want to hear that song again. Oh my god, I will do everything in my power.
I think they have a saboteur. I think this is a case of corporate espionage. Someone at Sony went in and said we will be knocked out of the console race entirely if the Wii Shop music is there. So they have someone who's they're bribing somebody to make the decision not to let it be there.
You know, this would be something I would agree with if. See, this makes me think about like, man, Sony used to have some fun like sounds happening in their menus.
Yeah.
And they sort
their boot used to be like fucking amazing. Like
they were known for their boot. Yeah. And now, like, I don't know. What does the boot do now?
What happened to background music? What's with the world we live in today? Why does the Xbox not have a funny little song playing in the background when I turn it on?
One thing I miss is, like, the PS5 still has background music. It's really chill, actually. Hmm. Like my girlfriend and I will get done watching TV and, like, just go chill for a minute. And, like, we won't turn off the PlayStation. The music's just nice and relaxed.
Is it just the kind of sound?
Yeah, kind of.
You know, that's kind of, you know, that's... It's just not as bombastic up front. It just kind of...
No, yeah, no, the boot is not like that PS2.
And you sink into the cubes, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah,
I've lived multiple days of my life with Wii Shop music on in my room. Right?
Yes,
like,
100%.
Like, it just hits. It just hits. And, you know, I would boot up my Wii and I'd just be like, yeah, I'll just leave that on while I'm doing some other stuff. I did that a lot.
Right.
It's formative for me. And how dare they?
Yeah.
I think that it'd be very easy to have it so, oh yeah, when you click on a video, we just mute this music.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be hard.
Or, like, there's so much you could do. I think, like, having little bits of music and that those sound effects, something, it adds to, like, the atmosphere of being on the console that I think is really fun. And, like, Xbox is like, we don't have anything at all. Like, Sony's stuff, that little hover sound, whatever you want to call it, in the background is nice. I like that. It provides that PlayStation feel, even if they're not as, you know, in your face about it as they used to be. But everyone remembers those intros to those consoles, like, very, very well. Like, they're popular. I don't know why they got rid of them. Mm-hmm. And then this just has, like, a fun... It's just like Nintendo. It has nothing to do with any of the franchises. Like, it's just fun.
I think that, like, consoles in general, starting with PS4... Switch and Xbox One, but really this past generation of Xbox Series and PS5, less so PS5, but definitely Xbox Series and Switch, mm-hmm. have just become immensely less charming.
Yeah.
Like, they are just sterile product. Like, the fucking PS5 just now got a small handful of backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And
they're really off, yeah.
And the Switch never really got backgrounds, which is a bummer because, like, people are doing mock-ups of Switch 2 background.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, they're looking at the Switch 2 UI, which does look improved. And, like, one of the first things they're doing on the Reddit is, like, all right, we made a Mario Kart background, we made a Mario background, and we made a, like... Like, we did a bunch of shit, and it's like, all right, well, like, you know, you could do more of that. So
they could. They followed the same trend as all the corporate logos getting more and more sterile and having less and less personality. And
I have it within reach here, an example of what they're supposed to be doing, really, they've stopped doing. Give me one second.
Okay, all right, we're gonna hang out. I'm waiting. I'm in. Okay. Oh, all right.
This is a Nintendo 3DS XL.
Yes. Turn that volume up.
And, you know, it, let's see. So my volume's up all the way. And and the fact that they don't have Hatsune Miku singing Fortnite Chug Jug on their consoles is, I think, an issue with the modern market.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's not something that we can easily solve.
Because it could be done.
Hatsune Miku Fortnite Chug Jug is really a step above what companies like Sony and Xbox are doing, and the fact that you can do that on your 3DS is a testament to the fact that Nintendo has got by with just good vibes historically.
Sure.
I think they've just had superior vibes for quite a while, it's a shame that they're departing from that success.
But everyone's doing it. That's a thing I find so strange, is like people remember that stuff fondly and then they're like, let's not do that anymore for reasons. Even when they state them out loud to me, like in this article, I'm like, that doesn't feel like a real reason. It's way too easy a problem to solve for that to actually be the reason. I don't know.
It's like, and the thing is like, you can at least allow for custom themes and custom, you know, everything. Like, that would be fine. Here's a whole bunch of backgrounds from different Nintendo games. Like, you know, just white, bro. Just white and black. That's what we get. And same thing with Microsoft. Microsoft released a lot of backgrounds.
Yes.
But, like, Sony is like, here's, like, nothing. It's like nothing.
I was so stoked when I could put on a PS2 theme. Which is a shame, because like they could be doing other stuff with what they're doing currently with PlayStation. I understand that's kind of their vibe, but they could be doing other stuff. And just like, I don't know. It just kind of, man, the PS4 really set the tone of like, what if we just kept doing what we're doing and let everyone else fuck up around us?
I get it,
but man, it's a bummer. The results are a bit of a bummer. So,
but you know, speaking of Sony's strategy, I think Nintendo is choosing to take a bit of a page from their playbook here. With our next story, Hades 2 will be a Nintendo Switch 2 console exclusive at launch. So, Hades 2, obviously it's already on PC. You can already play it.
Yeah, the early access. So
it's going to be there at launch. But instead of being able to play it on Xbox or PlayStation like you normally would be able to, Hades 2 is going to be only on the Switch 2 for, I imagine, a timed exclusive period that they have something to deal with.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm kind of here for it. I actually ended up buying Hades 1 on Switch as well as PC.
Yeah.
That's a good game for an on-the-go console.
It is. And also, like, it's cross-save with the PC version.
Oh, beautiful.
So
I
was able to ping back and forth pretty easily. Like, it was nice. Like, I would play a bunch of, like, Hades 2 on my PC and then, like, make sure I upload my save, and then when I'm in San Francisco, pick it up and just boom, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. You know, do I want it to be an exclusive? Not necessarily. I'd like people to be able to play that wherever, but you know, if there's one console for it to be on, the Switch makes the most sense.
Yeah. I think that it'll eventually come to the other ones. Like, yes. That's not a big deal. It's
right.
I do think, in terms of if you only play on consoles, or you prefer playing on consoles, this is a big game to get as a temporary exclusive.
Right.
Hades was kind of a big deal. It's a great game. But
at the same time, also not a heartbreaker for the other console people, because it's technically not finished yet. So I imagine when it is, maybe they'll expand it at that point. That'll be interesting. So,
Do we have a time frame of when that game is going to be done?
No clue. Is it in this story?
No. Okay.
Yeah, nope. No idea. But they're working hard on it. That game is good. Check it out. Got some of the best art, music, sound, game feel. It's a good
game. I just pulled it up, and they are expecting between Q2 and Q4 of this year.
Oh, nice. Good for
them. I love Hades 1. I've played quite a bit of it. Interestingly enough, I played it on Xbox Game Pass. So it's I thought they had a pretty good relationship with Xbox, so I expected they might be cultivating that, but to hear the story that it's going exclusive to Switch 2, it's interesting to me. I have avoided touching Hades 2 at all.
Sure.
Because I have heard stories from others who played a lot of Hades 1 early access, where, you know, a lot of the content was missing, and they ended up in a situation where they, you know, it's harder to revisit after you've put so much time into it, and you're really missing out on a lot when you dump a lot of time in early access like that. So I'm avoiding touching Hades 2 until it actually comes out.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Hades, so the moment any form of it came out, I was like, cool, I'm in, let's go. And but I haven't put a lot of time in a while, so I'll probably check in between now and its release. Happy for those guys. I want to support Supergiant and what they've been doing ever since Bastion. Like they put out good games, just good complete games.
And they're an incredible example of a really ethical company that is in the space right now, just making good games.
Yep, it's fantastic.
Our last news story, Toys for Bob, huh? They want to make Banjo?
Yeah.
They want to make a new Banjo?
Yeah.
They want to make a new Banjo. An interview with content creator Canadian Guy at Toys for Bob Studio had Paul Yan asked which developers or IP the studio would love to work on. And he said, there's so many, and that's one of the exciting possibilities of being independent. One company we'd like to work with is one we're already working with, Team Xbox. They've been a great partner. They also have a very interesting roster of characters and that Toys for Bob could have a lot of fun with. The Honey Bear is the first one that comes to mind. I think we can all agree that Banjo's been hibernating for long enough, right? And so it seems here that the primary thing that they're running into with the idea of them being able to make another Banjo game, given that the last Banjo game was, nuts and bolts, so it's been a very, very long time, and nobody liked that game. So the primary thing that's in their way is that Rare has complete creative control over whether or not they're going to make a sequel like that, or anybody will, and they don't seem to want to do it yet.
Fair enough. I understand. My main thing is they better get Grant Kirkhope back for the music.
I mean,
that's my main wish list item. And you don't have Grant Kirkhope, if nothing.
There's something from Grant Kirkhope here where he, based on his experience with Yooka-Laylee, the spiritual successor that they kickstarted for Banjo, and how it wasn't as successful as they would have liked. He thinks that maybe just the audience isn't really there. Grant Kirkhope, it says a composer, Grant Kirkhope, questioned whether the audience was truly there for a new game, which is a completely separate story from a while back in an interview they had with him.
I mean, I think after the Crash and Spyro and Astro, like, I didn't see a platform of revival, but, we don't know yet.
I mean, here's the thing, is there's a whole new generation that is aware of Banjo and Kazooie through Smash Bros, and Microsoft completely whiffed on taking advantage of that. But like, those characters are still there. Kids who have never played the original Banjo are aware of those characters. I bet you could do something with it, but you could just make a different kind of game. Let's actually adapt and try to come up with a different way to apply Banjo-Kazooie, the characters. Like, Nuts and Bolts decided to just do this wildly different thing that, like, wasn't, going in one direction or another. It was like it was its own unique thing that no one was particularly asking for.
Not that it wasn't interesting.
Right.
By most accounts, it was just poorly executed. It just was unfun to play. And it also wasn't Banjo and Kazooie.
Right. Well, so that's the thing, though, is Yooka-Laylee comes out, and people will say, I think it wasn't as successful as Banjo, but I wonder if you made Yooka-Laylee and it was done by Rare, and then you put the Banjo skin on it, I wonder if it would have done better.
I do think it would. And it's not as though Yooka-Laylee was unsuccessful, is the thing, right? It was a huge Kickstarter. It raised $3 million, and it sold over 1 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's good performance. But Banjo-Kazooie, it's it's been hibernating for, like you said, it's been hibernating for a really long time, and it's up in the air whether or not there's really a demand for it now, especially given that the Smash hype window has passed.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. We'll see what happens with Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
I think we we'll probably need to wrap up for today.
Podcast.
Sorry, I got to call the show earlier, guys. We got some stuff going on.
But we got some other stuff to talk about. We got a whole other week of video games, and we'll have a podcast next week. So follow us on socials, like and subscribe on YouTube. We're going to be posting stuff all week. So see you later.
Bye, guys. We love you.
Bye-bye.